roll out of the shadows and find that eventually there we are, what we are, and what we are is still family.
So on Monday, our family conversation refers this morning to something moms and dads have been trying to get their kids to do for a while. Stay in touch. Write a letter, or as the little kids told E.T., phone home.
I'll be right here.
I might feel better if I write a letter, if I write a letter home.
You know, when I went away to college, my mom actually addressed the envelopes that she put in my bag when I went off to Chicago to go to school, saying, please write me back. Well, these days we don't need to use snail mail to stay in touch, but the question is, are families more in communication, whether they're at college or around the dinner table, using tools like BlackBerries, text messaging, phone, video, Skype? Lisa Belkin, who writes the blog Motherload for the New York Times, joins us now from her home in Westchester County, New York. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
And also Sherry Turkle, director of the MIT Initiative on Technology and Self and author of the book Simulation and Its Discontents. She joins us from Boston. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning.
My first question is to you, Sherry. It was a major effort to get kids to write letters to their parents, but texting is a much easier communicative task. Does it create a back channel to mom and dad? Does it improve communication or just warp it?
Well, it certainly creates a back channel. It certainly is that parents and kids are more in touch. I guess that there is a difference between in touch and really being in communication. And I think that's the question of what are both the gains and the losses of texting. Because what you may get from your child is essentially a touch base. You know, I'm okay. You know, I'm here. I'm okay. You know, we're good. And lose both with your child, but also sometimes with your friends and your spouse, the kinds of communication where deeper things are discussed.
Hmm. Lisa Belkin, we've already seen plenty of instances where texting and email relationships have been very, very disruptive to families, at least in the relationship between the parents. What are the incidences of children changing the nature of their communication with their parents using these technological tools?
Well, I've seen it very recently. Our house has been like a laboratory of sorts. We sent a son off to college, and I have always texted with him. That's kind of been my method of communication. So I kept doing that, and I would get these little kind of scattershot updates. And my husband was feeling left out because he wasn't hearing anything. So he sat down on a Sunday and wrote a long email. And he got a long email back. And that's now become their method of communication. So what Sherry is saying is true. I was getting, you know, the touching. He's getting the real meat. And
that's
between the
so
two of us, we're actually talking to him.
You know, in my case, when I went to college, I would just do these really quick 30-second phone calls to my mom. Hey, I'm fine. I'm fine. Yes, the laundry's done. No, there's not a problem in the kitchen, in my dorm room. And my conversation with my dad were these very emotional, long, kind of I'm embarking on the road of life kind of letters. And that's sort of interesting. Sherry Turkle, do you think it's possible that technology simulates pre-existing communication channels, or does it create new, maybe sometimes fundamentally dishonest channels that actually conceal more than they reveal?
I think it does both. I mean, it's the needs of teenagers and the needs of parents really haven't changed. And so people make a judgment as to what's around that can meet those needs. But there are some ways, in which the new technologies can subvert sort of the best intentions, the best developmental intentions of kids. So, for example, I'm just thinking about a lot of the interviews I do with kids. They get very upset because, and here's like in the high school context, a teenager wants to not be there. You not be there when they don't want you, but when they want you there, they need you there. And their parents will come to pick them up after school, to pick them up after a soccer game, and the parents will be texting or on the cell phone and literally not attend to the child until, 10 minutes are in. And they experience their parents, and this is not just like, a couple of kids, but a lot of kids. They experience that their parents are more invested in what's on the BlackBerry, what's on the iPhone, than in them.
Hmm.
one kid said, she puts me on pause until she gets around to me.
Yeah, that's what our kids say, actually. My mom is on the laptop a lot, and I think they are constantly questioning, hey, why aren't you paying attention to us?
And I think that this is a growing development, because, of course, there's the mom. She's sitting, she's sitting waiting for this pickup for a half hour. I mean, it's the most natural thing in the world to start to do something that then, in her mind can't be dropped the minute the kid shows up. But there's that sense that a child wants to appear and have that parent's full attention. And I think that's something that really needs to be watched. Plus, kids are very upset that their parents text and drive.
Right.
Lots of kids are upset about that.
We get yelled at in our car. Lisa Belkin, what are some stories of successes and failures in communication as you've seen them on the Motherlode blog?
Well, it's interesting because there's two sides to everything. And what Sherry is saying is so true. We have to remember we're in charge. There is an off button. And that's my rule. That was the one I came up with, and it was hard won, Sherry. When I pick my children up, I am not on a piece of technology because their reaction was like a slap.
Now, we've had to do that in our family too, Lisa. The laptops have to close down at a certain point or the kids do go nuts. They think you're not paying attention.
On the other hand, I found that texting, particularly, it's a unique, it's a new thing, and it means they can reach out to me when their friends don't know it.
Yes.
And that, for me, gets rid of all the downsides. I got a text from my son at Halloween a year or so ago saying, can you come get me and tell everyone it was your idea?
Mm-hmm.
And he needed out. He needed help, and he never could have picked up the phone in that situation. He couldn't have spoken, but he could text.
That's really interesting. Well, Lisa Belkin writes the Motherlode blog, for our partner, the New York Times. Yeah, oh, don't we know it? And, maybe we should check in with you in a year to see if we can come up with some tools to mediate some of these new technological phenomena better. Sherry Turkle is director of the MIT Initiative on Technology and Self and author of the book Simulation and Its Discontents. Got a final thought for us, Sherry?
I love Lisa's story. I think it's important to make it work for your family and talk about what works and what doesn't work in families.
All right. Well, that's our family segment for this Monday. Thanks to both of you, Lisa and Sherry Turkle, director of the MIT Initiative on Technology and Self. Now you can get in touch with us.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.